have two guests with us with different political viewpoints, ready to talk with you about the top news stories of the week, including the just-released August jobs report. It's not a good one. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Friday, September the 2nd. We'll also talk about the president's planned address before Congress next week on jobs and the economy and the scheduling clash that occurred. We will also talk about the candidates that are announcing or planning to announce to run for U.S. Senate in Wisconsin and much more, including the topics you'd like to talk about. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us on Twitter at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guests. We are very happy to have with us Louis Fortas, editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express, and he joins us by telephone. Good morning. Good morning. And Brian Huffman is also with us, professor of management at UW-River Falls and faculty advisor for the UW-River Falls College Republicans. Good morning.
Morning, Joy.
Well, let's start with this news story about the jobs report. It says here employers added no net workers last month and the unemployment rate was unchanged, a sign that many are nervous that the U.S. economy is at risk of slipping into another recession. Well, both of you have some economics background. Louis Fortas, that doesn't sound very good.
Do you have, I haven't seen the numbers. Do you have a breakdown of public sector and private sector jobs in your...
Let me see if it says here. It says the Labor Department says total payrolls were unchanged in August, the weakest report in almost a year. It's the first time since February of 1945 that the government has reported a net change of zero. The unemployment rate stayed at 9.1%. Jobs gains in June and July were revised lower, showing 57,000 fewer jobs were added. The downward revisions were all in government jobs. The average work week also declined, and hourly earnings fell by 3 cents to $23.09. I guess I don't. Here we go. Government employment fell by 17,000, and private sector jobs added 17,000.
Yeah. See, I mean, the thing that you have going on right now, and it's unfortunate, is that, and this is a bad number, and you can't dance around that, but the private sector jobs are growing. And what's going on is you have a lot of this cutting at the governmental level. And the big reason is there is this myth, and it totally is a myth, that if you cut taxes on the wealthy, you will have fewer jobs. That is about the biggest joke in the economics world. And, I mean, no serious economist believes that, but the... it's become, you know, the kind of the mantra, and it's amazing how, you know, lower-income people can be, you know, screaming and fighting to defend tax breaks for the wealthy. But if you had balanced taxation in this country, and there are people that who can afford to pay much more taxes, Warren Buffett is advocating that, and that money is spent on infrastructure and things like that, the economy would begin to develop a little better, because right now you look at the situation. Private sector jobs are growing small and slightly, but it's the public sector where they're cutting back at the wrong time that's causing the problem.
Brian Huffman?
If you want to just maintain the current level of debt in this country, you have with taxes, you'd have to double every federal tax: income, payroll, inheritance, excise, the whole thing. There isn't enough money at that level. And as far as myths are concerned, I think the biggest myth that I've ever heard is a dollar on the demand side multiplies to $2. There's no empirical evidence for that whatsoever. So,
have you ever had Economics 101?
I've had more economics than I've had. Statics and dynamics and the whole shoot and match. This Keynesian stuff is nonsense. There's no empirical evidence for it whatsoever. None.
Even Richard Nixon said we're all Keynesians. I mean, at that point it became clear that and then the Reagan guys came in with this supply side economics, that even the people, some of the people that were the big advocates of it afterward realized it was, I think George H.W. Bush called it voodoo economics. Please don't be coming up with stuff like that.
Well, are we at risk of slipping into another recession, Brian Hoffman?
Another recession? I'd say that if we spend ourselves into oblivion, yes, another recession. Hopefully, cooler heads will prevail. This whole thing about the S&P downgrade being as a result of the Tea Party, one of the things the S&P said before the downgrade is you got to give us $4 trillion in cuts. That didn't happen. They were neutral on the issue of taxation, and you can read that in both S&P and Poor's Everybody.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at what happened with this S&P downgrade, after the S&P downgraded, where people, which is supposed to say U.S. debt is not as safe as we all thought it was, more money, the following Monday, more money went into treasuries than in a long, long time, and the interest rate actually went down. So, this is all we're dealing with. Brian says something about spend yourself into oblivion. My God, right now we have to be spending. The only thing that's keeping this economy down is lack of demand. For we business owners, unlike, I'm a former economics professor and now I own businesses, and the situation is it's demand that drives the economy, not, lower taxes or whatever. You only pay taxes when you make money.
Let me talk a little bit about President Obama scheduled to give this address to Congress next Thursday. We'll get into a little bit later the political wrangling over that date that he's going to be giving. But he's going to talk about the economy and what he wants to see happen to increase jobs, to create jobs, to get us out of this mess to some extent. What do you want to hear him say, Louis Fortas?
Well, I would like to see him talk about, for example, education infrastructure. I mean, that's how you build an economy, and that's how you build jobs for the future. And the problem he has is Congress won't cooperate. People like Eric Cantor, the majority leader in Congress, and that would much rather see the economy go nowhere under Obama's watch, hopefully able to knock him out in the next election, than to see people get jobs. That's the sad, unfortunate thing right now.
And what do you want to hear him say, Brian Hoffman?
Well, first of all, addressing that, Obama had control of the Congress for 2 years.
No, he didn't. Because
yes, he did.
Because the Senate had a filibuster.
If you don't mind. He had a Democrat and Republican a House and Senate majority. He could get done what he wanted done. And anybody who doesn't believe that can ask themselves how health care got passed. And as for what I'd like to see him say, I'd like to see him say Dodd-Frank is gone and Obamacare is gone. And Democrats admit that these are wet blankets on the economy. Back to Steve Wynn. Okay?
Yeah. And how does that create jobs, Brian Hoffman?
It creates jobs because it removes uncertainty. There's a ton of money out there on the investment side that's not being spent. And that's another thing Democrats hammer on, all this money sitting on the sidelines. Well, why is it sitting on the sidelines? People want to make money, don't they?
Because there's no demand. Economics 101, Brian.
Demand. There's demand everywhere. Target didn't do that badly.
Effective demand.
Demand's there. People are buying stuff. But you're not going to get $2 worth of economic growth for $1 worth of supply or demand side. It just doesn't happen that way. And there's, again, no empirical evidence. Show me a study. Cite a study.
So you're saying now that the multiplier effect does not exist in the economy?
I'm saying a $2 multiplier effect does not exist. I'm saying that's ridiculous.
Well, the exact number, no one ever said there would be.
Google it.
Let's take
So if it's on the Internet, it's true?
If it's on the Democrat and a Democrat says it, if the president's press secretary says it, that's what they believe.
We'll take some calls. Chris in Rosendale is with us first. Hello, Chris.
Hi. Yes, I have to agree with the guest that stated that the uncertainty is part of the problem. Morton Pharmacy, the largest privately owned pharmacy chain in northeastern Wisconsin, just closed down, and the president stated that it was Medicare reimbursements not covering costs and the increased burden of regulation that forced their hand into selling out to Walgreens. So we lose a great number of jobs in a independent pharmacy because of government regulation.
Louis Fortas?
Government regulation is just concentration that goes on in the industry when you have the big guys just keep buying up the smaller ones. And you can take a look at that in every industry. And, you know, you're going to say, is there regulation in every industry? No. I mean, and so regulation's not the issue. It's just that there's monopoly control. And the big guys keep buying the smaller ones.
Let's take Randy in Key Wascom next. Hello, Randy.
Hello. Before I start, I'd like to... Professor Hoffman, you teach at my alma mater, and an old running buddy of mine teaches there also, Earl Blodgett. Okay, now, as far as I hear Lewis and all these people on the left talking about taxing the rich, I'm a small business owner. I am far from rich. And every time they talk about taxing the rich, I take it in the shorts. I got it at Doyle. Hit me in the pocketbook, both taxes, all my fees on my vehicles, my licensing, and I get hit there. Obama hit me with increases last year by reducing deductions for business. You look at ways to save money, every place you look in government, there's bloating as far as the middle and upper management. I have to deal with the Department of Revenue, Department of Ag, and the Department of Transportation. And there's so many people standing around with their thumb in their ear that could be laid off and make more room. Another place, in the school districts, you want to save money, get rid of all the extra administration that got put in since the advent of the Department of Education. All these people sitting on their duffs in the administration building, that could be used for teachers.
Yeah, well, it's Brian Huffman's turn to respond first. Randy seems to be on your side on this, Brian.
Yeah, a lot of the millionaires and billionaires are millionaires on their income side, and basically they're small business people. And by the time they're done taking care of their employees, they don't have any money left over. And as far as infrastructure is concerned, we've got a bridge here that we want in Stillwater. And I mean, by we, I mean both Democrats and Republicans, senators from both states, House of Representatives people, and I'm talking federal, from both states are behind the project. You think we could get that thing built? They started in 1940.
Do you have Louis Fortas, this our caller who's a businessman, said he was taking it in the shorts? I believe that's what he said.
I believe that's what he said.
Mm-hmm.
And also to respond to Brian saying that, he's saying, you know, the small business people, they take care of their employees and all that stuff. At the end of the day, they don't have anything. Well, they're not going to pay a lot of tax. We're talking about people whose income at the end of the day, when you, after, you know, paying your employees and everything is over $1 million or $250,000, depending on which one you look at. These are the people we're talking about taxing. We're not talking about taxing the small guys who, you know, treat their employees properly and pay decent salaries and end up at the end of the day with, you know, a reasonable income. These are middle-class people. We're talking about taxing the wealthy. But back to Randy, who's going on and on about, you know, his taxes and everything. He started out by talking about how the fact that he went to a Wisconsin public university paid for by taxpayers when he was a child. They were paying taxes to create that university so he could get an education. And so I think we have an obligation, if we want to keep our civilization going, that we have to pay some taxes and have a decent educational infrastructure.
Let's go to Frank in Sheboygan next. Hello, Frank.
Hello. Good morning, and thanks for taking my call. I'd like to share an idea, not an original idea, it's something I saw twice in letters to the editor and the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And for the people who say, well, If you tax the rich, you're taxing people who create jobs, and so you want to avoid taxing them so that they'll create jobs. The letter said, well, if in fact lower taxes mean more jobs, why don't we make the tax rate dependent on the unemployment rate. So these people would have some motivation to really work to get that tax rate down. And computers being what they are and the speed of information these days, you could analyze it every quarter so people could anticipate what their taxes would be. And at the end of the year, there could be a summing up, and you'd say, wow, we've driven the unemployment rate down. Our taxes are going down.
Mm-hmm.
Then there would be a direct connect between this statement that if you tax the rich, you are hurting the rate of employment.
All right. Thank you very much, Frank. Brian Hoffman.
I think that, I mean, there's something to that. It could work. If you had, say, a permanent tax cut per person you hire in your business. I'm not talking about short-term, you know, hey, you're going to get a cut here, but a permanent tax cut, something that they can plan. And the problem is, for a lot of businesses, uncertainty, not knowing what's going to happen. But if they said, okay, at a certain point, you get this tax rate, but what we have instead is the opposite. Above certain levels of employment, you have to start paying more for insurance. You have to start paying more for other forms of regulation. There's actually a tax on employment.
Louis Fortas?
I just go back to the basics. You ask any business person, they will invest if there is demand. They will expand their businesses if there is demand. And if there isn't, they won't.
Linda in Monroe. Hello, Linda. What do you think?
Hello, Joy. It's a good program, and I agree with Louis Fortas. Now, how can we have jobs when all the Republicans want to do is make cuts, cuts, cuts all the time? Now, I think we should quit calling the billionaires, like Warren Buffett and 40 others say, and raise the federal individual income tax rate to a higher rate. And I think then everything would even out more, and we'd have they would be creating more jobs.
Well, Brian Hoffman, what about that?
I'm still looking for a mechanism there. Warren Buffett's income, by the way, is taxed at a much higher rate than he claims. Basically, what happens is the income that comes through Berkshire Hathaway is taxed at the corporate rate, and then he pays taxes again at this lower rate, which he quotes, and you know, and he's everybody's hero. But the fact of the matter is, he knows what he's paying in tax, and it's more like 70-some percent than the ridiculous, whatever he was, 20-some percent that he reports that he says he's paying.
Louis Fortas?
Well, I guess I would trust Warren Buffett, who's been a successful business person, to know how much he pays in taxes rather than a professor who doesn't know Warren Buffett. So I'll stick with Buffett on that one.
Our guests are Louis Fortas, editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express, and Brian Hoffman, professor of management at UW-River Falls, faculty advisor for the UW-River Falls College Republicans. We're talking about the news of the week. Coming up, we'll talk about the timing of President Obama's speech about jobs and the economy. It's going to be next Thursday night. We'll also talk about how to pay for disaster relief and more state and national politics during this edition of The Week in Review. 1-800-642-1234 if you'd like to join in, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Of course, you can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or on Twitter at Joy Cardine Show. A severe thunderstorm warning is in effect for parts of Portage, Washera, and Wood counties until 9:15 this morning. Radar indicated a line of storms capable of producing quarter-sized hail and winds in excess of 60 miles per hour. Storms are moving east at 40 miles per hour. These storms have a history of producing widespread wind damage across La Crosse, so beware and take care. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up this afternoon, Jean Purcell in for Ben Marins, and it's another edition of Your Views on the News after 4 this afternoon. You can call in with your thoughts on what you consider the week's most important news story during Your Views on the News every Friday after 4 o'clock. This is our regular Friday Week in Review. We have two guests with us from different political viewpoints talking about all the top political news stories of the week. And we'll talk about this clash over the timing of President Obama's speech, his address before a joint session of Congress on economic growth and his long-awaited plan for jobs. President Obama originally asked to make this address on September the 7th. And Republican John Boehner, the House Speaker, balked at that. Had various reasons. There also happens to be a GOP presidential candidate debate on that night, on the night of September 7th. And the House Speaker said, do it the next night, Thursday night instead. And so President Obama agreed to schedule his address on September the 8th. There happens to be a football game on that night, the opener with the Green Bay Packers versus the New Orleans Saints. Turns out now that it's been worked out that the Obama speech will be at 6 p.m. Central Time on Thursday night, next Thursday night, and we will carry that live on the Ideas Network, and presumably it will be over by the time the football game starts. But what's all this finagling, a political football there, I guess, Louis Fortas?
I think, Joy, it goes back to 1994, when actually before that, when Newt Gingrich wanted to become Speaker, and he made it real clear that he said it, I mean, explicitly, that if I can't be Speaker, I'd rather destroy the institution of Congress. And that was when probably the lack of civility really started, where when I served in the legislature, you know, I hung around with Democrats, I hung around with Republicans. You know, after a session, we'd go out and have a beer together and you know, kind of talk about what happened at the session and laugh a little. I left in 93, and it was after that that it became a situation where the Newt Gingriches began to say, you know, the Republicans shouldn't talk to the Democrats because then they begin to compromise and they begin to work together. And that was the beginning of this separation. And it's really become really, really sad and has really hurt both, you know, local units, you know, local legislatures and the Congress. And I think that's just another manifestation. I think this may be the first time that a speaker ever said no to a president coming in to speak. I mean, it really is, it's just a different world than it used to be.
Mm-hmm. How sad is this, Brian Hoffman?
First of all, I'd like to see anybody find that quote. I've never heard that. But in any case, and the House comes back in session at 6 p.m. on Wednesday night. They need a concurrent resolution, which means the House has to pass it, then the Senate has to pass it, then the invitation is given to the president, then the Secret Service sweeps, okay, all that stuff, and that was all going to be done in less than a day, according to his schedule. So they're the smartest people in the world. They don't know procedure, and they don't know the Republicans had a debate that night. It speaks for itself.
Mm-hmm. Louis Fortas?
Yeah, I mean, think about it. If you were you wanted to get your message out, would you rather compete against the Green Bay Packers or one of many, many debates that are being carried on one channel, these Republican presidential debates that are occurring well over a year before the elections? I think I would rather go against the debate than go against the Green Bay Packers, but that's just being logical.
That's hardly the point. The point is they knew the debate was at that time, and that's the time they scheduled it.
Well, let's move on to some other issues from the news this week. Other controversial messages out this week in former Vice President Dick Cheney's new book. He's drawn some fire from his colleagues in the Bush administration. Brian Hoffman, what do you make of Dick Cheney's book and some of the head exploding revelations?
You know, the only thing I've heard so far is that he had recommended bombing Syria. And that Bush then polled the room, which, you know, God knows, I thought Cheney was the president of the United States, but turns out Bush polled the room, and there was no support for the idea, so it turns out Bush made a decision. He said, we're not going to do that, thank you very much. And so you got two things there. First of all, you got Cheney being overruled by the president of the United States. And second of all, you got an idea that really was pretty good, and as a matter of fact, Israel ended up doing it because it was necessary.
Mm-hmm. Louis Fortas?
So you're advocating bombing Syria. Anyway, you know, again, I think you're kind of in the minority here. Even the ultra-conservatives like George Will are saying, you know, about the Cheney-Bush years or whatever, you know, that, you know, what happened in those 8 years? You had a big war, a costly war, I think is what he said, and it was done under false pretenses. So that's coming from George Will, a conservative's conservative. So I think that... I think that Cheney is trying to rewrite history. I think he's trying to, you know, leave something for the historians. But he's getting a lot of pushback, not, you know, as much from the Democrats as from the Republicans.
We will have a week in review quiz question related to the Dick Cheney book, so stay tuned for that. Moving on to another issue, Darren in Viroqua has a topic he'd like you to discuss. Darren?
Mr. Fortas talked about the lack of civility and the need for civility, and I have called for this for quite a while. I see it on both sides. I heard the rhetoric of Obamacare, and I keep hearing about Obamacare. There is no national health care, so let's drop that rhetoric. On the left, you have people like the congresswoman from California saying Tea Partiers can go to hell. You have another congressman who said that Tea Partiers are out to lynch him if they would have a chance, and he's an African-American who said that. We need to end this explosive rhetoric. And if I may, on the speech, this was clearly planned by the community organizer in chief to upset the Republican debate, and it was an attempt at one-upmanship. This is a campaign speech that he wants to deliver. He's had 3 years to deal with jobs, and he has failed miserably.
Darren, did you just call the President of the United States in your...
The community organizer chief, because I would like to encourage you to have Dr. Corsi on your show to discuss the birth certificate.
And you think that we need to have a more civil rhetoric, Darren. Thank you. Louis Fortas, what about we need more civil rhetoric in terms of Obamacare and, you know, and telling the Tea Party to go to hell?
Yeah, I think one of the big problems that you have is safe seats in Congress or state legislatures. Because when people are in a safe Democrat or a safe Republican seat, then they worry about a primary from their extreme, and then they keep getting pulled further and further either right or left. And that's real problematic, and that's what makes me real nervous about the new redistricting lines that have been drawn. They created in the state of Wisconsin is that we created a lot of very safe districts, so you're going to get very extreme people on each side, and the civility is just going to keep going down and down. And it's unfortunate because, they say, I had the honor to serve at a time when it was a civilized thing. We had a Republican governor, and the both houses were controlled by Democrats, and we all got along, and a lot got done. And, you know, I don't see that anymore.
Yeah, Louis Fortas, did the president choose next Wednesday as his original date to give this speech to upstage the Republicans?
I have no idea, but... I say there's going to be a lot of these Republican debates coming up. I think at one point I read 8 of them within the next few months or something. If he did, it would be a silly thing because, you know, there's going to be a lot more of them. So I have no idea, you know, what went into that thinking. I just look at the situation and say, I wouldn't want to compete against a football team.
Well, Brian Huffman, our caller also said, criticized your use and the use of Obamacare when referring to the Affordable Care Act. Do you consider that uncivil to use Obamacare?
I would think Obama would consider it a compliment. It was shoved through without Republican votes at all. The president wanted it. But I must say that this is one place where I probably am in agreement here in that I think civility is a good thing. But that said, both sides feel they're right, and both sides should fight for the right. They should fight for what they believe in. And they can do that. I'm not in favor of peace in the House and the Senate. I'm in favor of war, but a civilized war. You can't compromise if the other side is, and this is Democrat or Republican, if the other side says 2 + 2 = 6, and you know it's 4, you want to compromise and say it's 5?
Well, you know, he also brought up this, this did happen this week, an Indiana lawmaker, a black Indiana congressman, used a lynching metaphor to describe Tea Party policies that he says would turn minorities into second-class citizens. And I'm wondering if you have a reaction specifically to those comments, Brian Hoffman.
Who was doing the lynching in the South? Let's be honest about this. It was the Democratic Party, not the Republican Party. And right-wing radicals like Charlton Heston marched with Martin Luther King, and that was before it was popular in Hollywood. Republicans are in favor of freedom, and that's it. And a lot of this stuff is slavery. It is ruining, and I know there's lots of black people that are Democrats. Okay, fine, but it's ruining them. They're, black unemployment among teenagers is nearly 40%. If you were the Grand Dragon of the Ku Klux Klan, you couldn't have arranged anything any more horrible.
Mm-hmm. Louis Fortas?
I have no idea the connections he's making between all that, but the point is, I think this congressman said something he should not have said. It was inappropriate. It was intemperate. I think he even admitted that, and that doesn't help civility when you make a statement like that. At the same time, these policies are that are happening both at the state and the federal level in the state of Indiana. That is really, really hurting poor people, and there's a disproportionate number of poor people who are black. So it's really, really squeezing poor people, and so I think there's a lot of frustration. Does that justify make it acceptable to make a comment like that? No, and I think that comment was intemperate. But there's policies that are being developed that are truly hurting people, and this frustration comes out in bad ways at times by making intemperate comments. But the thing is, he apologized for that, I believe. But let's look at what the real policies, what they're doing to poor people. That's the situation that United States of America has to look at.
Let's move to one other issue before we take a break and move into some state issues and other topics after the break. Eric Cantor is pressing for budget cuts to cover the cost of cleaning up after Hurricane Irene and other disasters. And he says that relief funds should be offset with spending cuts. What do you think of that, Louis Fortas?
I think it's so consistent with everything that I think I've been saying, and that is the way you get the economy going when it's in recession is you stimulate it, you spend money. Then when the economy is doing well, like when Clinton left the White House, there was a big surplus, then you can, you begin to buy down your debt that you built up when you needed to stimulate the economy. A catastrophe, and as terrible this hurricane was, and loss of life and everything, it's going to cause demand because people have to rebuild. And I think Cantor is very concerned about the economy picking up under the Obama administration. So he is concerned, saying, "Well, okay, we got to rebuild because there was this catastrophe, but at the same time, I don't want to see it be creating jobs and helping the economy, so let's cut other things to offset it." That's what's going on. And you can twist it any way one wants, but that's what's happening.
Is that what's happening, Brian Hoffman?
Of course not. It's really funny when you accuse the Democrats of being unpatriotic, as 9,000 articles written in the press, and when the reverse happens, there's not one. But in any case, that's you just heard it, an accusation of Republicans being unpatriotic. Eric Cantor is a responsible person, and we've got a huge debt, and they don't even talk about the real debt. By the time you start including off-sheet things like Medicare and Medicaid, we're in serious trouble.
We're going to take a short pause coming up after the break, the Week in Review quiz. We will talk about some Wisconsin elections news, who's lining up to run for the U.S. Senate, and some to talk about whether Congressman Paul Ryan wants to be Vice President of the United States. This is the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Brian Hoffman, Professor of Management at UW-River Falls, Faculty Advisor for the UW-River Falls College Republicans, and Louis Fortas. He's Editor-in-Chief of the Shepherd Express. He's a former Democratic state lawmaker. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Time now for the Week in Review quiz. Former Vice President Dick Cheney's memoir, In My Time, hit the shelves this week. One of the topics covered in the book is the often speculated undisclosed locations where the vice president spent time. We want to know which undisclosed site did Cheney spend the most time? That's the Week in Review question. Do you know? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can also email talk@wpr.org. We will randomly select one winner from all of the correct answers. We'll announce the winner and the answer to the question at the end of the Week in Review. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Which undisclosed location did former Vice President Dick Cheney spend the most time? Well, let's talk some more politics people call in their guesses to the Week in Review quiz. We are talking with Brian Huffman and Louis Fortas during this edition of the Week in Review. And in some state political news, Representative Paul Ryan, Republican U.S. Representative Paul Ryan, had said recently that he was ruling out a presidential bid, that he would not run for president. But he says that that doesn't mean he wouldn't consider a spot on the national ticket. He would not rule out a vice presidential run. Is he a good vice presidential candidate, Brian Huffman?
I think so. I had a chance to talk to him at a party event, and one of the things he said at the time was that he was really more of a policy wonk than a than somebody wanted to get involved in administration. Although typically with the party, both parties like to use the VP slot as sort of the heir apparent. So I'm not sure that the party would want him in that slot if he still thinks the same way, that, you know, I really don't want to go anywhere from here.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Louis Fortas?
I think after that budget proposal that he put out and the response he got, I think Paul Ryan, who's apparently a very affable fellow, needs to kind of lay low for a number of years to have, hopefully people will forget some of that. And because right now I think he would not be a real popular addition to a ticket.
Yeah, what about that Medicare reform, Brian Huffman? Is that a disadvantage or an advantage?
Well, the problem for any politician is, you know, they call it the third rail of politics. You touch it, you're dead. So if a Democrat tries to fix it, they're dead. If a Republican tries to fix it, they're dead. And as a, I would say, patriot and as a realist, Paul Ryan takes it on. And I think so much the better. One of the reasons that people like Ryan are popular is because they don't seem to be that worried about the next election.
Yeah, a lot of leading Republicans weren't so worried about that Medicare reform proposal, Louis Fortas. They were trying to get him to run for president.
That is one part of the Republican Party, and I agree. I think he's popular with a segment of the Republican Party. But I think he would not fare well in a general election in a competitive arena.
I think I'd like to see him debate our gas-prone vice president. I think he would fare pretty well in that competitive arena.
Well, we'll see what happens with Representative Ryan. There were other announcements in state politics. Former two-term Republican Congressman Mark Newman announced that he will seek the U.S. Senate seat that is being vacated by retiring Wisconsin Democrat Herb Cole. There were others, and we'll go through some of the others as well, but your take on Mark Newman running for U.S. Senate, Brian Huffman?
Yeah, he's welcome to it. He's got a business background with the home building and that sort of thing, and some credibility, certainly. Ran for governor, did not too badly in the primaries, and, you know, yeah, I think he'd be fine.
Mm-hmm. Louis Fortas?
Yeah, I think Mark Newman made a mistake last year. I think if he would have run for Senate last year in 2010, which was a real landslide year for the Republicans, Ron Johnson would have not gotten into the race, and he would have been probably U.S. Senator. So I think his timing is not good for him, but we'll see.
All right. Well, another Wisconsin Assembly Speaker, Jeff Fitzgerald, also announced that he's going to run for the U.S. Senate seat. Does he have a good chance of getting through this primary, Brian Hoffman?
I think so. I'm not wild about either one of them necessarily at this stage. I haven't heard, to be perfectly honest, a whole lot of where they separate.
Mm-hmm. Louis Fortas?
I think I may agree with Brian. He said he's not too excited about either one of them, and so I tend to agree with that. So I'll just leave. I will say I second Brian just to show the listeners that there can be cooperation and civility on Joy Cardine show.
Thank you.
There we go. Well, I should, just for fairness reasons, Republican State Senator Frank Lissay has not officially announced, but he has been saying this week that he is going to be doing it soon, or that it is highly likely that that he will also run. Ted Kanivas, another state senator, is another name that's being bantied about on the Republican side. Can you think of anybody else, Brian Hoffman? Maybe former Governor Tommy Thompson?
Yeah, Tommy Thompson's name has been tossed around, and he's kind of the safe bet. He has not been terribly popular over health issues, that sort of thing. But I know the local Wisconsin Club for Growth got hammered on an anti-Thompson ad, although it really was run by the National Club, which is completely not related.
Why is the National Club for Growth targeting Tommy Thompson, saying that he's, a big spender or something?
Yeah, he supported health care reform, Obamacare, if I can use that word still, large budgets in Wisconsin, but, that was always the case. I mean, that certainly it didn't change after that. So the question is, I guess, instinct. Is does he have the instinct? Like Romney, for instance, will say, we had the health care in Massachusetts. First of all, it's a state. It's not the federal government. States are different. Fine. But people still question his instinct. They say, why did you think that something like that should be centralized?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and your take on the rest of these candidates, including Tommy Thompson, Louis Fortas?
I think Tommy's the interesting one. Tommy was, when he was governor, he basically owned the state. He was very, very popular. I don't think he could get through a Republican primary this time because the party has moved so far to the right. But I do not think Tommy is going to run for several reasons. One, I don't think he can afford to run. He's making too much money. He'd have to give up, all of his other interests, and he's doing very, very well financially. Second, Tommy Thompson is not going to become a junior senator and just one out of 100 people. He's just not going to do that. That's not the Tommy that I know. And the other thing is, he's been on a lot of boards of directors since he's left. And if he, got serious in a race, his competitors, whether it's in the primary or in the general, are going to start looking at all these companies whose boards he serves on, and anything that they've done is going to be pinned on him. So it'd be very, very difficult for him to do it. I think Tommy likes the attention, but I think when push comes to shove and you have to hand in the nomination papers on July 10th, his name will not be on the ballot.
Interesting, yeah. Let's talk on the Democratic side briefly. Russ Feingold said no, he's not going to run for this office or any office in 2012. Other Democrats, Tammy Baldwin is saying she's most likely going to do this. I didn't know that U.S. Representative Ron Kind is also eyeing the U.S. Senate seat, as is former U.S. Representative Steve Kagan of Appleton. Louis Fortas, so what do you see on the Democratic side?
Well, one thing I do see is Ron Kind, I would be shocked if he runs. I would be happy to bet that with anyone that he is not going to run. Steve Kagan is an interesting candidate as a physician, and he's coming out of Green Bay area. And Tammy's done a spectacular job. Tammy is very, very well liked, and when she was in the state legislature, she was well liked on both sides of the aisle. So I don't know, but I mean, at this stage of the game, you know, there's going to be one winner, and there's about 8 or 10 people, you know, going to be talking about it. So it's really hard to figure out, you know, where it's going to go. But
Certainly is early. Brian Hoffman, your early thoughts on the Democratic candidates or potential candidates for U.S. Senate?
Well, I think things look a little differently over here because, of course, Ron Kind's our representative, and the guy's got boyish good looks. He's articulate, and sometimes you get in office just because. I mean, image helps a lot. I think he'd have a good shot at it. He beat two credible Republican candidates, the most recent of which, Dan Kampanke, ran a really credible campaign. I mean, he didn't. Kind didn't have a cakewalk, and he did it, and he did it in a part of the state that's, I think, kind of middle of the road. We have a lot of Twin Cities Metro people living in our districts. I think he did a good job. I think our dream candidate, though, is Tammy Baldwin. I guess I have to come down on the other side with your with the other caller here. I don't think Tammy Baldwin would be a. I think she'd be great. I mean, for us, for Republicans, we got tons of video on her. So go ahead.
Tons of video. I mean, as in terms of policy positions.
She's got history. Same with the candidate they ran here, Shelley Moore, for the state Senate. I mean, there was some really nasty video of her. You know, we breathe union. You know, it was great.
Because we're almost out of time, I want to get both of you quick thoughts on the Marathon County Labor Council originally saying Republicans were not welcome to march in the Labor Day parade in Wausau on Labor Day, and then reversed the decision and said that the Republicans could. Louis Fortas, what do you make of that?
Well, I think that that Republicans should certainly be invited to march in the Labor Day parade. My problem is that with this current Republican Party and everything, I don't know how many would be interested because it honors labor. And but in the old days, again, I go back, 20 years or whatever. I mean, there were a number of Republicans who were very solid supporting labor, and I don't see much of that today. So if some of them want to come out and march in a parade, wonderful.
Yeah. So a quick thoughts, Brian Hoffman.
We still do support labor, always have, and the fact of the matter is you're not going to work if you don't have a job. But Democrats are very good at liking to control speech. I noticed John Kerry's, a guy who could have been president, talking about how the media shouldn't give equal time or equal balance to the Tea Party. You can't let those people talk. So, of course, why not keep people out of a parade that the public's paying for?
Well, we will have more on labor issues on Labor Day, our annual program on Labor Day between 8 and 9. We'll have the head of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO talk about the state of labor on Labor Day Monday between 8 and 9. It's time for us to reveal the quiz winner, Carol from Wauwatosa, who correctly answered the undisclosed site that former Vice President Dick Cheney spent the most time in was Camp David. Cheney writes that he also spent time at his home in northwestern Washington, D.C., and his other home in Wyoming. He says he was surprised by the amount of media interest in where he was hiding out. So Camp David, the correct answer, and we will be sending Carol from Wauwatosa a fabulous prize, one of the books that we featured on the program this week. Well, Louis Fortas and Brian Hoffman, thank you both very much for being with us.
Thank you, Joy.
Brian Hoffman, professor of management at UW River Falls, and Louis Fortas, editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express. Have a great weekend, everybody. Thanks to Amanda Magnus, Michelle Good, and Rob Ferret for producing the hour. This is the Ideas Network.